Welcome to Headlines. This is David Lichtenstein here in the Yeshiva Shalmaila. This week we have an interesting show continuing our conversation of Sheitlach. We'll be speaking about Tznius as well. So we're going to be speaking about the opinions in different parts of the world. We're going to be speaking to Rabbi Yeshua Pfeffer. He's a Dayan, Kol Chayshe Mishpat in Yerushalayim. He's a Rav in Yerushalayim. He's the editor of Tzarach Iyun. And he'll be talking about what are the yeshivish standards for tznius, both in wigs and other things. What is a minimum standard for tznius? What is a maximum standard for tznius? If you have a chumrah, well, does that mean everybody else has to have that chumrah as well? Can you rely on other shitas in tznius? We will have Rabbi Baruch Oberlander. He's from a chassid of Chabad. He's a shliach of Chabad. He's the Av Bezdin of Budapest, the chief rabbi of Budapest. He's a mechaber sfarim, has printed much. And he'll be speaking about the Chabad shita as far as covering your hair. We will have Rabbi Harry Marillis of the Emes Femuna blog. He'll be speaking about the modern Orthodox sheet of Tznius. I want to make a point. The last 2 weeks' shows, our goal was to create conversation, not to paskin. Now there is a Bezdin in Eretz Yisrael that's sending new shluchim to India to do more research. We created more of a conversation. By the way, in the coming weeks, we will have Harav Boaz Bardeya, the Sfardish Shita in hair covering. We'll be here in the next few weeks. Some of the topics we're going to be speaking about the next few weeks are Chassidish Shchita. What is it? Is it important? Are there really chumras there? Or is it just a reason to pay a lot more money? We'll be speaking about LGBT amongst us. Halacha. How do we deal with them from a halacha and hashkafa point of view? The New York education bill, is it really good for chinuch? We'll be speaking about alternative medicine in halacha. Is it avodah zarah? Are you allowed to use it? Is there any credibility to it, etc.? Our Israeli number is 02, that's for Yerushalayim, 372-0304. And our English number is 33011-702-50. We get a lot of callers from those areas, and I've been asked to announce those numbers again. So here's this week's halacha riddle. So we've been speaking a lot about Sfiras Omer. It's an appropriate time of the year. So here's a shaila. And last week, by the way, you guys killed it. I asked two riddles. And the first one I thought was an easy one, and a second one, and I got so many amazing answers. So we are going to be sending a gift. At the end of the program, we'll be Linnea to play one of the winners, one of the correct answers, and we'll send them a gift, two of the last two headlines that came out. I want to remind everybody that this program is for, so we speak your learning, we get all the opinions, and this is a complex opinion, and there are many hanhagas all the way from Hasidim, the modern Orthodox. And so if you hear an opinion, no, do not paskin for this program. It's used as a reference point to know what your minig is, where you're going to school, who your Rav is, etc. And there are very many nuances. Then we will say shitas. Some of the shitas are outlier shitas, which were not ungenum and halacha. So I ask you to use discretion and seichel, and do not try this at home. There are many different halachic opinions. Some of the halacha is unclear at its sources. Some communities establish their own guidelines. You should not deviate without speaking to your Rav, his or her Rav. The purpose of the interviews is for learning only. Let's go to our program. So here's this week's riddle. I have to make it a little bit harder given how bright this crowd is. Tosfos and Menachos Samach Vav, Divrei Maaseh Zecher LeMikdash. And the Ran brings it, the last Ran in Pesachim says this as well. You want to make a bracha on Sfiras Omer, Bein HaShmashis, Kosafik Drabanan Lekula. So if you comes Bein HaShmashis, it's after Shkia, Taisa says you can make it. Now here's the problem. By Lulav, Mishnah Berurah and Tafresh Nun Beis, says that on Bein HaShmashis of Yom Tov Sheni, you potter from Lita Lulav, the Safik Drabanan Lekula. Exact opposite. Since it's Bein HaShmashis, you don't know if it's Yom Tov anymore. You don't take the Lulav anymore. Same thing. Shulchan Aruch and Tafresh Pei Zayin Sivkat Hei. By Kriyas HaMegillah, if you didn't hear the whole day Megillah, You could listen by Nashmashish. You drank a lot Purim by the potty by night. And you didn't hear Megillah, and you wake up, and it's almost ice Purim. It's Beit HaShmashish. What's the halacha? Shulchan Aruch. Listen to the Megillah, but don't make a bracha. Because how could you make a suffix? You're going to be nichnas into a suffix bracha levatala. You don't. Same thing. L'gabi tzkiya shofar. And tafkuf pechesiv katan aleph. If you didn't hear the shofar, if you had too much apple and honey, and you drank too much, and you slept all the way through till Bein HaShemashis, or if somebody was a chayla, let's not make what's on this, somebody was a chayla and he woke up Bein HaShemashis, or somebody didn't have a shayfer and they brought him the shayfer Bein HaShemashis, you listen, but you don't make a bracha. So why by shayfer, by Megillah and Lulav, we say Bein HaShemashis, you take it without a bracha. By Lulav, you don't even take it, but without a bracha. But by Sfiras Aymer, we say just exact opposite. Sfiras Aymer, Bein HaShemashis, Hey Mamru, Vei Mamru, make a bracha by Sfiras Aymer. Why is Sfiras Aymer different than all these other mitzvahs? That is this week's riddle. Before we go to our program, I want to say I got this voicemail, and I got many voicemails. We got probably 100 calls this week on this, probably another 100 emails, 100 calls. So that's a lot of response to one particular program on Shedlach. And here's one caller.
Hi, I'm calling about the last show about Shaitlach. I'd like to ask, why are you so on the side to permit them? I mean, even say they're not of Israel, but it's not sneeze to wear human hair Shaitlach. It defeats the whole purpose of all of the the heter that the Rabbonim who allowed it was the original shaita was made from a horsetail, not anything compared to today's shaita. Listen, for sure not a human hair one.
So he has two issues. He says, first of all, the shaitlach today are different. They used to be made out of horsetails, and I would like to point out that the Dark Emotion in Ayin Hay in Arachayim and the Mishnah Brura brings it as well. Says no. Human hair shaitlich was a norm. And additionally, the Mishnah Brura brings two opinions, whether you're even allowed to use human hair shaitlich that's made out of the same person. In other words, a girl has beautiful hair, she cuts it off, turns it into a wig, is she allowed to wear the same hair? So human hair shaitlich have been around for thousands of years. It wasn't horsetails. And part of the reason I would assume is that, let's go to the second question. The second question is, why do I sound biased? And I admit I am biased, and I'm biased for a number of reasons, okay? And let me tell you, halacha and hashkafa, the biggest paisik we'll ever see in the world until Mashiach comes in the Western Hemisphere, in my humble opinion, is the Baal Igros Moshe, who he said on himself, and he was a very humble man, he said he would be part of the Sanhedrin. And I'll tell you, when I was by his Levaya, Rav Shach, Rav Michal, they both said he would have been a gadol in the time of the Chassam Sofer. Chassam Sofer died close to 200 years ago. He lived 200 years ago. He would have been a gadol in the time of the Chassam Sofer. And I've said this story before, but I heard it from the Baal HaMaisa, and it's a remarkable story to show how Rav Moshe was like Mishichba Yolamayla, over all the Paiskim of his generation. There was a Rosh Yeshiva who I spoke to. His name is Rabbi Portnoy. He was teaching in Ar Samech, so he has a Baal Tshuva. And during one of their learning sessions, the Baal Tshuva says to him, my father told me I'm a Kayin. He said, oh, how nice. In another session, he says, and by the way, my wife, who also became a Baal Tshuva through Ar Samech, when I became from, she joined, or maybe she inspired it, and they have three kids together. He says, my wife was actually adopted by her family when she was a child. She was a guy, and they were Magaya her. And that's why my kids are blonde and blue-eyed. So this report puts two and two together. He says, wait, your wife is a Baal Tshuva. She grew up, she was they Magaya her as a child. So she was a guy. Well, a guy is Aser, a Giyoris is Aser to a Kayin. Alfdin Zaina, if she was Magaya after three. And he says, how old was she? Oh, she was five or six. He says, oh my goodness, you're not allowed to be married to your wife, la halacha. So here we have a guy does tshuva. His wife becomes from, he has three kids. They have to get divorced. He goes running to Reb Shlomo Zalman. Shlomo Zalman says, I don't know what to do. So they go to Reb Eliashiv. Reb Eliashiv says, he thinks, I don't know what to do. So this guy in desperation says, is there anybody who I should talk to? So Reb Eliashiv says to him, Gefreg Reb Moshe, go, if you ask Reb Moshe, Reb Moshe has a heta. We would, of course, you know, we're Saimacha, you know, Reb Moshe is the Gadol Hador, the Paisik Hador. So he flew to America, and he comes to Reb Moshe's apartment down in the Lower East Side, and he knocks on the door, and the Gabbai says, or Reb Tendler, whoever the Gabbai was, says, I'm sorry, the Rashiv is not feeling well. So he said, tell him, I'm told the Rashiva, I'm Beshlichas of Reb Eliashiv and Reb Shlomo Zalman. So he went in. So Reb Moshe said, come in, I'll talk to you for a few minutes. And Reb Moshe was lying in bed. He tells Reb Moshe the story. And Reb Moshe says, you said his father's fry? He said, yes, he's not Neman, he's not a Kohen. Then he said, and you said she was adopted by a Freya family, and they were Megayaher, the Bezdin was Megayaher? He said, yeah. He said, she's not a Geiris. And I imagine the reason for Reb Moshe is because Allah is the reason why you're allowed to be Megayaher a Katan is because it's called a Schus, the Gemara in Ksubas and Daf Yud Aleph. Zachil Adam Shalai Befan of Geir Katan Mat Bil Nois Yaldas Bezdin. So what Schus is it to be adopted by a Freya family where you're going to be Mechal Shabbos and eating a Veil of Sitreifis? So he said, Zionish King Geiris. So he sent a telegram back to Eretz Yisrael. He said, I came into Reb Moshe with a Kohen and a Geiris, and I left with a Yisrael and a Shiksa. So, you see, Reb Moshe was not naive at all in Halacha. He saw straight through what other people, G'day Le'olam, couldn't see. He saw in one, he said, he paskined it in 2 minutes. And then he walked, Shekhsen, they took him out of the room. Reb Moshe was our God Ledler, our Paisik. So not only was he just the greatest Paisik we'll ever hear, but additionally, he lived here. And there's two important things in that. One is, you know, the famous Gemara, and the Rashba brings it, says, Halacha, we paskin that way in Rashba, in Chelek Aleph, Reish, and Gimel. The Gemara says, B'mkoymei shel Reb Elezer, they used to cut wood on Shabbos to make an Izmol for Mila. And the Gemara in Kalabasar, I don't remember what daf it is, but the Gemara in Kalabasar says that the Asrei Reb Yehuda ben Beseira, they would eat chicken and milk because he didn't hold the loisavashol gediba b'chalevimai. He says, and a chicken, any oif doesn't give milk. He says, there's no isser of basar oif, and they paskin that way in his Asrei. So this is Asrei Reb Moshe. But additionally, and this is an important point, and we've quoted it before. You know, the Gemara says Yiftach b'derek Yishmol b'derek, and Rabbeinu Menoyach says that not only does it go on who the gadol is, but it depends everybody in their location. You have to go after the gadol of that location. He knows that location. He knows the peculiarities of that. And the Mishneh Berurah brings in Hilchos Yom Kippur, when you choose a doctor to tell Chayla whether to eat, he says the doctor of your city, he brings this Rabbeinu Menoyach, is the gadol of that city. Don't go to a doctor. He knows the peculiarities, the type of virus that's going around the neighborhood now, the type of whooping cough, whatever it is, he's in touch. So Reb Moshe lived here and he knew it, the halachas of here. And Reb Moshe has a fascinating tshuva in Evan Ezer. He was asked by a person whose wife used to be Megaleach Reisha. She shaved her head, Kiminik, like many, the Chassidim, the holy Hungarian Chassidim. The Netziv brings it as well. It was actually a Takanas Arba Rasis, which is a Polish minig. So Reb Moshe in Evan Ezer in Aleph Nun Tes was asked, he says, you know, I married a woman whose minig is to shave her head. And I don't have that minig, and I find it very upsetting. And she says, look, this is my minig, what do I do? So Reb Moshe says he has a right to be makbid and to tell her to shave her head. And he says, shaving the head, the Torah calls, is an act of nibul. It says, by an Ashes Yafas Toyer, he says, V'golcha es Reisha. And Ramban says, because it's an evil gadol, it's an act of, the women cry when they cut their hair, right? It's something, it's a halo of beauty, a woman's hair. She says, Avada the Baal could be makbid. And here's the exact lashon of Reb Moshe. He says, Ein lahachshev es habal la'adam kal. The husband who does not want his wife to shave her head should not be seen as an adam kal, that he doesn't want gedorim v'siyagim, because he says, we see chazawa makbid on this. And he brings a raya. He says, the Gemara says, by Abba Chilkia, he says, Chassidei Olam, the holiest people in the Gemara, like Abba Chilkia, the barbrei of Chayni HaMa'agel, Chayni, who when he davened, he was able to bring rain, parnasset, to feed the world when everybody was starving, and he was the only one who could do it. So the Gemara in Tainis says on Daf Chav Gimel, he was makpid that his wife should dress beautifully and look beautifully. Why? Ramosha says, Shelo yiten einav b'isha acheres. He says he shouldn't be nice and einav b'isha acheres. He says a husband has a right to be makbid. So why do I say this? I say we live in America today, and you know, marriage is hard. And there's a lot of divorce. And we have to be cognizant of it. And Ramosha knew what the streets of America are like. And I don't know if he knew what the internet would bring, but I guess he knew the callous of America, the lack of Yerushalayim in America. He knew the fire that was the street. Remember, even though Ramosha was nifty, there was no internet, but there was a hippie generation. The way people would walk on the streets was the same then that it is now. Clothing is optional, right? And Ramosha understood that Shelo Yiten Einav B'Isha Acheres by Chayni HaMa'agel is certainly in America, in New York and its surrounding cities, in circa, when Rav Moshe lived, 1990, 1980, 1970, I don't remember the exact date of this tshuva. So why do I say that marriage is hard? So when people come and they say, we have new chumras, and Rav Moshe paskin on Indian here, Shetlach, that it's mutta. So when people come and they say, you know, there are banim in Yerushalayim and Bnei Brak, and I say, you know what? In Bnei Brak, if you feel that the streets and this, and you don't have to worry about Shelo Yiten Einav V'Acher, or there's a concept in the Gemara, maybe 20 times, all different halacha, L'chavav al baila, a nidaz asa kol zayin l'chavav al baila. You're allowed to be mistakel, but say kala kol zayin l'chavav al baila. Shaloi l'ganois ish, a woman shouldn't, shaloi l'ganois, a woman shouldn't look unattractive, shaloi tizgana love. There's maybe tilei tilim, 20 different halachas in the Gemara, shaloi tizgana love. Kala's toich shiva is allowed to wash her face. Shalait is gana. Aninus isn't toicha. Is it noig shiva, etc. All shalait is gana. Love. Reb Moshe lived here. He knew marriage was difficult here. He knew that the streets are on fire. He didn't want husbands who work wherever they work, or they see internet, in other words, they're exposed to media, to come home and the wife is wearing a piece of plastic on her head or shaving her head. So I say that if the women who are noyig that way, they shaved it or they have these chumras and they're happy with it and their husbands are happy of it, tavi olam bracha. It's definitely, you know, any chumra in halachas is avisha b'kedusha. But if it causes shalei tiskane, shalei lechavav al baila, we have the psak of the gadol hadoyer, and he says no. And if you're coming to be machmir, you're not coming to be macher, you're coming to be mekel in shalom bayis. You're coming to be Mekel in Zerel of Atullah. You could be coming to be Mekel in Znus, or who knows where, what marriage dysfunctionality could cause. So yes, I do. I am partial, and I say that when you paskin something, you have to paskin looking at the entire picture, and especially when we have the Murray, the Asra of America, Mokim, Shoreb Elezer, they were Kairis, the Mokim of Ramosh, and he said over here, no, what our main is thing that we have to worry about is Shalai Lechavaval Baila, Shalai Tiskana love. And that's why I had this sort of a biased opinion. My apologies if you don't agree. My intent here is to create conversation, Divrei Torah, to show you all the different opinions. I apologize for any time that I offend somebody. It is not my intent. But when every time we speak about Dvarim that have to do with Halacha, that there are a number of opinions, well, 50% aren't going to agree. I recognize that. So I love you all, and I respect no matter what you do. I'm just pointing out my bias in this matter. Before we go to the our wonderful guest, I'd like to say a short word on the Parsha. And this Parsha, it's like it goes against everything that we speak about here in the program. It's, you know, today, what's popular? What's popular is understanding the Rebbe who puts his arm and supports the Bacher, the teacher who says, I'm going to understand the girl who comes from this type of house. I'm going to, we're moving towards enlightenment and compassion. And then you look at this week's Parsha and you say, what's going on over here? The story of the Makalel. And we've all had this story in our lives, or we've seen it in Yeshiva or Beis Yaakov. You have a boy. His His father was killed by a Mitzri, who then rapes his mother. She was beautiful, Shlaimus Bas Divri. The Gemara says, and Yonason Ben Uzziel says it, that this Mitzri had 120 Jewish slaves who worked for him, and one of them had a beautiful wife. So he went in, and he raped the wife, and he killed the husband. And this little boy, he's Yinatsu, he was fighting. Right, what does that mean? It says, Vayinatsu Bamachnas, and the Mefarshim say, what were they calling him? They were calling you a little Egyptian, you know, Mamza. That's what they were telling him. Imagine what life was for this kid in the Machne of Klal Yisrael, the Degolim. So it says he picked up his thing. He was looking for some place to go. So he camped himself in Machne Dun, which is where his mother came from. Right? And what did they say? Tame Arois. He said, what did I do? My father was killed. My mother was raped. Arois! Arois! Kadayim! And what did he do? He was Makalol B'Shem. And what did they do? And they didn't know what to do. He said, Haitziyuva. So we say, what did this kid do wrong? You know, the kid in yeshiva, he goes to yeshiva, and he's not smart, or he comes from a not good family, or the girl whose her looks aren't what other people expect of her, or the boy or the girl who have a weight issue, so many issues, and the kids in the class make fun, and they go to the principal, and they says, they made fun? Well, guess what? I even have a better joke. And the kid turns around, and he makes an obscene gesture to the principal, and what do? They throw the kid out of school. We've seen this. And you say, how could this be? I want to, and I'm not sure I'm right, I want to suggest an answer. There were two people, I want to juxtapose two people in the Torah. You have the B'nai Tzlafcha, they were orphans. And they said, Ein lanu na, they had no Nachla. And what did they do? They went to Moshe Rabbeinu, and they figured it out. And then you have the Makalel. And you know, the Makal really had a very adverse sense of a set of circumstances. He was the kid in the class who had terrible acne, the skin who never went away, whose parents didn't have parnasa, who didn't have shalom bayis, who had addiction issues, who had food, diet issues, anorexia, bulimia. They had somebody in the family who was sick, who sucked all the attention out of the family. There are so much tzaras in Klal Yisrael. It's people, humanity, we have so much tzaras. Most of it we didn't ask for. And there's two attitudes. We could do what a very great Jew, my hero, you know who my hero is? Rabbi Eckstein from Dor Yesharim had four children, Rachman al-Islan, who died of Tay-Sex. And he said, four children died of Tay-Sex. I could cry, I could jump off a bridge, I could shoot myself, or I could eradicate Tay-Sex from Klal Yisrael. And that's what he did. He was here in our program. He said he was there when the only hospital for Tay-Sachs in New York City, the ward, they put a chain lock on it. He eradicated Tay-Sachs, and he's working on eradicating. He could have been Makalel. He wasn't Makalel. He went ahead and he used that energy to do something superhuman. We've all heard the story of, you know, father sees a child, the Jeep turns over, and a father... A skinny guy, 120 pounds, with superhuman strength, picks up the Jeep and turns it over so his kid could get out. That's Rabbi Eckstein, four children. And you know what he did? He saved 40,000 children, maybe 400,000 diseases. Or he could have been a Makalel. So the Torah says something very powerful here. Do you know the Netziv was a brilliant kid? He played all day. He was not interested in learning. And famously, his parents said, you know what, you're not interested in learning? His father was fine. He said, good, you're coming to the shoemaker to become an apprentice. Because here in the Litta, people were very poor. At your bar mitzvah, you went, or 12, you went one of two ways. You were one of the few who could sit and learn forever. But the rest of them had to eat. They had needed apprenticeships. They got jobs when they were 11. They went into apprenticeship. His father took him to the shoemaker. Here, start working on the shoes. So he said, a shiver ran through my whole body. And he was never mevatel another moment after that. You could be Makal, or you could change the world. In my life, I've seen this many times. Think of it. The worst insult the worst time somebody hurt you, did it inspire you to say, I'm going to try harder because I'm not going to let that blankety blank blank be right. So we could be Mikal and Yinotsu and start fighting with another guy, or we could use it as nuclear fuel to change, to do, to inspire ourselves. I heard from a Chavrusa, going to be like Feldheim. He taught beautifully. He said the pasuk, "Even Moasu Haboinim Hoysal Pina." The stone that was despised, the unfit stone, one oddly shaped stone, when they came to build the Beis HaMikdash, it didn't fit in anywhere. The Shamir shaped it in some bizarre fashion. And then when they came to the top of the Beis HaMikdash, there was one stone, the capstone, nothing would fit. And one of the builders remembered the castaway stone, this oddly shaped stone, became L'Rosh Pina. So he said, many people understand it. They say, you know, somebody gets beaten up, you say to him, you know what, when you grow up, you'll be 6'2", and you'll beat the other kid up. The teacher, one day that teacher who embarrassed you will be ashamed. That's one way to look at it. It's a superficial way. Maybe you'll be able to beat the person who embarrassed you. But he said a deeper way to understand it, and I agree, is like this. He says, Evin Moasu Habainim, the thing that most hurt you in your life, Haisal Aresh Pina, can be the reason for your greatest success in life. To think your biggest hurt, I'm going to let that thing beat me. I'm going to let that blankety blank guy be right and me be wrong and fail. I'll show him. Life gives us things. We could be Mekalel, or like Rabbeinu Yoina writes in Shari Tshuva, Kina Falti Kamti. He said the Nefila is a reason for your success. So what do? Haitziyus HaMekalel Menamachne. Mekalel is not the way of the Jewish people. We don't curse the darkness. We light a candle. And I'll tell you, in my life, I've seen this many times. You know, I remember years ago when I lived in Lakewood, there were so many, get all the time knocks on the door, people crying. They can't afford a bris. They can't afford a bar mitzvah. They can't. And then you get approached a lot of times. And it used to drive me crazy. I said, the holy, holy and galite. They're serving the greatest cause, Torah. And then when they come out, they don't have parnassah. And then I was approached by a younger man, Reb Daniel Soloff, and he said they're starting an organization there called PCS, which trains the younger light. And it's, I don't know, 15 years later, and 5,000 guys graduated later. Because my wife looked at me, she said, the Jews don't curse the darkness. We turn on a light. And that's the message of the Mekalel. Take the biggest grief, your biggest aggravation, your biggest embarrassment, and use it as a fuel to create something, to create yourself. Even Moasu Habayim, the thing that embarrassed you the most, Haisal Aresh Pina, make it turn you into the best you can be. Let's go to our guests.
We have on the phone with us from Yerushalayim, Rabbi Yeshua Pfeffer, who is a Rav in Ramot. He's a former Dayan and Rav Asher Weiss's Beis Din. He's the chief halachic writer from Rabbi Fleischman's yeshiva, which is the number one, I think. They train more dayanim than anybody in Eretz Yisrael. And he's the chief halachic writer for Din. It's an honor to have you with us, Rabbi Pfeffer.
Thank you very much. Pleasure to be here again. Thank you.
So, Rabbi Pfeffer, we had on a Lubavitcher Rav from Budapest, a big Talmud Chacham, who spoke about Lubavitcher Shita in Shetlach, a little bit in Sneas. And then we had on somebody from the Sephardi community. So we wanted somebody from the yeshiva community, and I know you're a Dayanis in the yeshiva community. You're very respected in Eretz Yisrael. So tell me a little bit about what is the yeshiva world's opinion about Shetlach, about human hair Shetlach, about Tefach B'Sheerva by Sar, about, you know, wearing a Shetel at home. Give us a little bit of, I know you've written about this. Give us a little bit of your chavizdas.
Okay, I'm happy to speak about the topic. I have to say that within the yeshiva world, or the yeshiva community, or the Haredi community, broadly speaking, I don't think it's not a uniform community. It's not homogeneous. There are, you know, a variety of opinions, and these can be seen very easily. Anyone coming to Yerushalayim just looks at the kind of leaflets and broadsides that you see for and against Shetlach and human hair and tznius issues in general, which clearly are a very important part of our Yiddishkeit, both because of their inherent importance and also because they define what the public domain looks like. Because it is such a public issue and such a defining issue, then people really care very much about it. And this is always there's a certain tension here because, of course, the halacha wants to express the value of tzius, but on the other hand, if you get too caught up in all of the, you know, nitty gritty and the fine lines, and then you can sometimes lose track of what, one second, there's actually a value here. There's actually a something about privacy and something about dignity and refraining from externalization. And sometimes the whole debate that goes on is so externalized, it's not such a perhaps tanua way to have the debate about tznius. So that's really an introduction to the topic. You know, we want to realize the value of tznius, but we also need to understand that it's not just about the halachic, you know, centimeters. It's about the value, and education for tznius goes beyond halacha. So,
Rabbi Tefer, let me interrupt and share with you something. A number in the last few months, there was a school where one of the students sent a video where they lined up all the girls, and I think these were, if I remember, 9-year-old girls, and they were measuring with a ruler their hair, exactly how long their hair was. And it reminded me of the Mishnah that talks about how you weigh a behemoth for Erechin. Now, if tznius means, a certain being like a ben melech for a boy and a bas melech for a girl, which means talks about dignity, how would they act in Buckingham Palace? If you look at the queen, she doesn't run around in trousers, nor does she wear, provocative outfits. So the halachas of tznius and chazal wakeveya could have been written in Buckingham. It's exactly how a ben melech and a bas melech. And I'm looking there measuring the girl's hair like behemoths, and I'm thinking, this is a person who may think they're doing the halacha, and they're violating the exact spirit of the, it's the total violation of the bas melech treating them like animals. So it's a case where, you know, dignity, personal privacy, respect for other were totally violated by somebody's mishigas. And so I'm just seconding the motion that.
There's
a tension between what is halachically correct and what is dignity and privacy, etc.
Yeah, I can readily agree with you, and I would say that it is a great shame that many of our girls find it very hard to speak about tznius as a value without automatically thinking about centimeters and denier, thickness of socks and length of hair. And I'm not saying that these details are not important. They have their place. But when they get in the way, when they cloud your vision of what tznius really is, then, of course, we're not doing something right. And the other point that you mentioned in passing, but it's another important point, is that it's very easy to be stringent and then to place your stringencies, which some of them are really meshugasim, but to place the burden of those stringencies on the girls. I saw recently a notice at a local shul that said, you know, we've had some very upsetting and inconvenient incidents because of girls wearing socks that were like flesh-colored socks. So please warn, you know, mothers and daughters to refrain from these. You know, it's a real discomfort. And again, you know, halachically, everything's great. There's no halachic taina here. But because there's some badly educated men who behave, I guess, like behemoths and tell off girls who are dressed absolutely fine, but not to their taste, so we're going to make the girls take on some new chumrah. And these chumrahs, of course, it's all against the whole spirit, the whole idea of halacha. Halacha gives you range, it gives you a certain fence that you don't you're not afraid of falling off the end of the roof. But once you have that fence, then it's a fence to live in. It's a fence in which you should be able to really live those values, to realize what it means to be a Jewish person with those values. And once you make a fence within the fence and you narrow your scope to a very narrow kind of area, field in which you can live, then of course you basically stifle the person's ability to express and to articulate and to live those values. So I identify with that opening point. But to get back to the, yeah.
one more question, Rabbi Pfeffer. To further prove the point that Tznius is greater than way it's understood in the street by the hoi polloi, that it's about trying to restrict a woman's movements, right, or provocativeness, etc. Most of the Gemaras that talk about Tznius talk about men. And most of the halacha that's quoted about Tznius is speaking about men. It says, Tsanua bebeis hakise. Rav Huna was... So what does that mean, Tsanua bebeis hakise? It's talking about men. It's talking about, in other words, it's talking about the crass humor, sounds, that appearances that are inappropriate. So it's not just talking about provocativeness. It's talking about class, the opposite of vulgarity, the opposite of, you know, not fineness, coarseness. And again, halachically, tell me if I'm wrong, most of the Gemara said that Tznius talk about men, not women.
I would say yes, and I would say even further than that. I mean, of course, you have Gemaras such as a person shouldn't walk behind a woman, and that's an instruction to men to be careful of where they walk, right? The Radvaz says that that's because of hihurim, that a person shouldn't come to improper thoughts, and therefore he should be careful not to observe the motions too much. But we're not telling women to stay off the street. We're telling men to watch out for their own benefit and for the dignity and the cleanliness of their own thoughts. And the same is true for the sugya in Brachos that speaks about Kriyashma. That's not a sugya that really tells women how to dress. We can perhaps extrapolate from there. But the sugya itself is speaking about in which circumstances should you or shouldn't you be saying Kriyashma, and about how your thoughts have to be proper and clean and appropriate for the time of davening and for saying brachas. So even the real, tznius-related sugyas are also addressed primarily at men. I mean, again, the pasuk tells us what does the Kodesh Baruch Hu want from us? Kim asayis mishpat davas chesed me'atznei aleches, right? To be a modest person, to be somebody who is the opposite of, as you said, of vulgarity and coarseness and of course, arrogant. You know, you meet people who are perhaps, you know, halachic, men or women, but their arrogance and their externalization and their shallowness is everything but tznius. So absolutely.
Okay, so I'm sorry I interrupted you twice. I often get criticized for this, but continue what you were telling us about.
So in terms of the yeshiva world, again, it's a diverse place. But I would say that, you know, probably the starting point for this is Rav Moshe, when it's famous, a number of famous tshuvas of Rav Moshe Feinstein, where he speaks about the question of covering hair. This is a delicate question because we have the Rama in Siman Ein Hey that speaks about, he brings an opinion of Rishonim that even less than a tefach, of a covered part of a woman's body is considered to be an erva. Of course, the discussion there is for purposes of Kriyashma, but still it's extrapolated on how the appearance or the public appearance of a woman should be. And then the question is whether that's extended to hair covering also. And Rav Moshe, in a couple of, I think, well-known shuvas, he says that we don't extend it to the question of hair covering. And he says that when it comes to hair covering, we can be mekel up to a tefach. He does say that it's worthy of covering hair completely, and he's very happy that hair should be covered with a shetel. He has shuvas about shetelach also, and he doesn't have a problem with that. But he does say that he's speaking to a Talmud Chacham, I think, and he says, you know, even for a Talmud Chacham, there's no problem for a Shidduch, for getting married with a woman who will be uncovering up to a Tefach. He speaks about a Tefach as a surface area, and that's also a Machlokes, but he says up to a Tefach of hair being uncovered is okay. So, you know, I think many people go with that kind of direction. People don't necessarily think of Tfachim, and they don't have to, but it means that you cover your hair, broadly speaking. Broadly speaking, it's a complete hair covering. We don't go with, you know, Rubei Kekulei and outlandish ideas which haven't been accepted in Halakha. But we have a complete hair covering, and we're not worried if some parts of the hair are showing on the sides, on the front, on the back, coming out, the Seah Hayotis Mina Mitramasa, something that the Rishonim speak about. So we're less worried if some elements of hair come out. We're aware that there's a Zoyah. We're aware that there's other, you know, chumras that one can take on if one wishes. But in terms of public morality and public halacha, I would say that's the basic. That's where we start from.
So let me ask you something, Rabbi. As a yeshiva dayan, if you would see one of your talmidim, that's why his wife uncovered her hair at Tefach, would you say anything? Would you say he's doing like the Shulchan Aruch?
If he up to a Tefach or more than a Tefach?
No, up to a Tefach.
Up to a Tefach, I wouldn't say anything. I would make a bracha. I'd probably make a bracha even if it's more than a Tefach based on the Aruch HaShulchan. But, you know, again, if a person is keeping to halacha, the fact that other poskim want to be more machmir and so on is not a reason for us to go telling people off. You know, that's not to say that each community doesn't have a right to legislate or to discern, to define the parameters of its own tenuous values. You know, that's a question of whether you have to wear socks or you don't have to wear socks, the length of skirts or the length of sleeves. And all of these different kind of elements are a question mainly of community values, of community, you know, public morality and public keeping of halacha. And like I said at the beginning, tzniut is very much a public face. That's why it has such this importance. And each community has the right to define for itself. But in this issue, you know, the less than a tefach and a bit more hair and a bit less hair, this is really, you know, fine-tuning. I would definitely not say anything about this.
So Rabbi Sefer, could you tell us, like, what are the halachic guidelines and where is it minig and chumra? Like, 4 inches below the knee, sleeves down to the wrist, you know, stockings, a leg can never be uncovered. Which of these are halacha, which are communal, which are minig? Give us some guidelines.
Okay, it's a tricky question because you have many different shitas among the poskim, and there's going to have to be some picking and choosing here between the different poskim. And, you know, as norms change, of course, again, you know, just to take as an example, before I directly answer your question, to take as an example the question of whether basulis, whether maidens, unmarried women, need to cover their hair or not. You know, this is, you know, it's a huge question. It makes a huge difference to the way the public domain looks and you know, the way we bring up kids. And this is, of course, a tremendous machlokes. And the Shulchan Aruch paskens that unmarried women need to cover their hair in Evan Ha'ezer, even though the Shulchan Aruch in Orachaim mentions that you can make brachos in front of women whose custom is not to, where the custom is for unmarried girls not to cover their hair, then you can make a bracha in front of the unmarried girl who's not covering the hair. So, you know, this is a huge question, of course, and it developed based, of course, on custom. In Arab countries, the custom is for girls to cover their hair, and whether married or unmarried, and of course that's the tznius norm, and because it's the tznius norm, so that becomes the obligatory norm. It's the norm that we have to keep to. And Rav Moshe mentioned this. Rav Moshe himself brings a raya, he brings a proof from the case of unmarried women that the question of hair covering depends on the norm. He actually brings it around to the Aruch HaShulchan also, that in places where it's the norm for unmarried women to go with uncovered hair, which of course he says is wrong. It's, you know, the Gemara says it's a din Torah in the Ksubas. But he does say that this is a proof for the Aruch HaShulchan, that these things depend on custom and that itself, the fact that there's such a tremendous distinction between one community and the other concerning whether the obligation to cover hair applies even to unmarried girls, that demonstrates the force of custom and how things are able to change. But to get to the question, yeah.
Well, Rabbi Faber, I was in Eretz Yisrael 2 weeks ago, and I saw a number of young Jewish girls. I think they were 7 or 8 years old, totally covered from head to toe. Like it wasn't
this
a burqa.
The shawl. This is their shawl.
This is not unlike the Rambam. It's in in Hilchos Ishus. I don't remember if it's either Perek Tesvav or Chav Beis, where he says the derech of an isha is to go with a redid, which means a full body covering from head to toe.
Yeah.
And clearly halachically today we don't that was in Arabic countries, and that would have been obligatory, I imagine, if you lived in that country. The Rambam Paskin said it is obligatory.
Absolutely, the Rambam Paskin the redid, and the redid, of course, the source of that is in the Gemara in Ksubas for the Das Moshe, that the kalasa is not sufficient,
yeah,
and you need
Gemara and the Fayin Beis.
Exactly, and of course nobody does that today, certainly not in Western countries.
Tell us what is the halachic minimum, and then what was added on by customs in different countries.
Well, the halachic minimum again, the Gemara mentions one specific instance of Sheik Be'isha Erva, and on Sheik Be'isha Erva, I think it's the Eshkoil and perhaps some of the other Rishonim say that the reason why the Gemara singles out Sheik Be'isha Erva is actually to make this point that this is something that doesn't change. Sheik, of course, I'm referring to Sheik as meaning the Sai, which also emerges from the Pasuk.
Which the Chazon Ish disagrees with, but let's continue. Yeah, I'm sorry,
the Chazon Ish, well, he finishes off as a kind of a suffix, the Chazon Ish, because he doesn't want to dispute the Mishnah Berurah. But the Pasuk says, Gali Sheik Avri Naharot, and then Tagel Ervascha, meaning that there's a connection between the Erva and the Sheik. They seem to be close to one another. But again, assuming that the Sheik is the upper part of the leg above the knee, so there are Rishonim that make the point and say that is something which is unchanging, even in a society in which the custom, let's say, or the norm would be to wear very short skirts, then that would be that would still be forbidden, alpi halacha. I can't say this without mentioning Rabbi Vado Yosef, who writes in a famous tshuva that if there's a choice between wearing trousers, wearing pants, and between wearing short skirts, he says, well, of course you should wear pants, because the short skirt is a real issue of causing erotic and improper thoughts. And whereas, you know, we have other issues with pants that we consider them to be immodest, but it doesn't reach the level of Sheik Be'isha Erva, which Chazal say. So that's one, for example, halacha that would be unchanging, and because it's something which is a part of human nature, that when you get close to the Erva and where you have areas of the female body that cause these kind of thoughts, or improper thoughts, then that wouldn't change based on society.
From the knee on, let's say you're saying the knee, our minig is to cover. What about from the knee on? Well, what's the halacha?
From the knee down?
Yes.
From
so
the knee
that,
down.
I know many seminaries are makbid, many girls, that has to be 4 inches below the knee.
Well, again, from the knee below, the reason why people are generally makbid on longer skirts is because to ensure that no area should be uncovered when a girl or a lady would sit down. But in principle, beneath the knee, that's called the makam. It's not called a sheikh, and therefore it would depend on the custom.
Except for the chazanish. Except for the chazanish, right?
That's correct. Again, if you say that this is considered a sheikh, then of course you would need to cover it based on the principle that sheikh be isha ever. But even the chazanish is reluctant to make a firm decision on this because the mishabura is so clear. And you know, again, zilbasar tama for one. You know, there's a certain zilbasar tama here. What's the problem? The problem is that it's going to cause hirhurim. We know more or less. We have a certain intuition about things that cause hirhurim. And again, I'm not denying that this is community based and things change based on different societies. But certainly, one can understand intuitively that above the knee is an area that ought to be covered based on tzniyus values. And like I said before, the pasuk itself implies that it's the area above knee. Beneath the knee will depend on custom, and in therefore there's no strict halacha. In places where the custom is not to cover, then you don't have to cover. Now, it's true that this is of course a very, very significant machlokes. And at the same time, it's a little bit. Let me tell you what I'm thinking. What I'm thinking is that we live in a world, we live in a modern age, where the road, the street, the public domain, the farhesia, is so not sneeristic. It's so immodest, even promiscuous on some levels, and you know, we can pride ourselves so much on having the values of tznius being expressed and having our men and our women care about not externalizing themselves, not demonstrating themselves, not showing themselves off. You know, it's such a virtue. It's such a, you know, it's a joy to be able to live in such societies. When you think about that, then these differences become, you know, come on, okay, these centimeters and these centimeters, you know, it makes you think about, you know, that it's missing the point. You know, the point is that we care about keeping the private things private, about you know, and of course, again, I'm the last to be chassid shalom mezalzel in the fine details. They're important. But it's also important to put it in perspective, to put it in context. And the context is that you know, we're able to maintain a tzniyistic society. And whether you're in Bnei Brak or in Rishalayim, and you know, whether you wear these colored socks or these colored socks, you know, I'm not the person to make too big a deal of these of these signs. I know that some people do, and some people think it's worthwhile printing broadsides in very bold letters and telling us that all the terrible things in Klal Yisrael happen because we're wearing the wrong color socks. I don't buy that.
Let me go back to some of the points you mentioned. I think in Afka Mina, whether let's say you go like the Mishnah Berurah, who says it's at the knee, or the Chazanish would be at the ankle, is if a girl is not wearing socks, or wearing short socks.
Sure. So
according to the Chazanish, it's the equivalent of wearing short sleeves, or it's the equivalent of a low-cut blouse. And according to the Mishnah Berurah, it would be perfectly permissible, which is what Rav Moshe writes in the Tshuva. So I think that machlokes is very relevant. And because so you'll have a school that says, you know, if a girl doesn't wear stockings, she's over. Well, it depends. According to the Mishnah Berurah, she's not over. According to the Chazanish, it would also be, I'll tell you where, for me, it's particularly a problem, is that we very frequently have not religious people over Friday night. We do that on a constant basis as a method of kiruv, particularly Friday night, but often for both Shabbos meals, we'll have Friday people over. And if you mock, if you're not nizah, if you're not saimach on the Aruch HaShulchan, which I do very reluctantly, so then it becomes a whole issue. At what point do you have to try to look into your siddur, or turn around, or try to create some other thing? And at what point you say, look...
Sorry to interrupt, but don't forget, the Aruch HaShulchan only speaks about hair. He doesn't speak about other covered parts of the body.
I understand, but the Svara would arguably be, I think, through it. I think would be, you could technically extend that Svara.
Well,
right?
to let's say to sleeveless, to a girl who's wearing a sleeveless...
Short sleeves or a skirt that
right.
you would say goes to the top of the knee. It's debatable, but I would take that position, and we could discuss that later. So if you don't want to, so for me it becomes a shaila. When do you look in? When don't you look in? So knowing that there's a halacha, say, look, you know, mikra din, you're allowed to do this. Havada, you know, our daughters, you know, a makbid on this, etc. But it does,
right.
you know, it is important from a halacha point of view to know what is the halacha,
right.
what is the minig,
right.
what is the chumra, etc.
Right, but
know, even
Talmidei,
even if you don't hold of the. Even if you're in Bnei Brak and you don't hold of the whatchamacallit.
The Mishnah Berurah. But I think that even Talmidim of the Chazon Ish would concede that yesh al milismaich, right?
Yeah.
Meaning if the alternative
yeah.
is to drive yourself crazy, to look away, to cause somebody offense, you know, we have to understand that, you know, tznius is beautiful and important, but you shouldn't pay a price for it. Meaning if you're going to be offending people, turning people away from Yiddishkeit and doing things that are unpleasant for yourself or for others, then you know, then you can be makbid on Ikar Adin, and certainly the Mishnah Berurah and many other poskim is a sufficient yesh al milismaich in this case.
So what about Rabbi? Let's say you're making kiddush and you have a balas tshuva or not a balas tshuva, a fryer person who's maybe will one day be a bal tshuva or a balas tshuva, and she's wearing short sleeves. Give us some guidelines on that, or a shirt that's lower than up to the, you know, the clavicle. What would you say? How would you give us some guidelines?
Well, first of all, you can close your eyes, you know, yesh al milismaich, and just, you know, have good kavana with your eyes closed, and that's the easy way out, both in answering the question and in technically, in practical terms. But of course, beyond that, if one wants to actually know the halacha, these are tough questions. Sleeves, for example, some places can assume that the Zroya is like the Shoik. The Mishnah Berurah mentions when he speaks about Hani Prutot, he says something depends on Minot, he says, but when it comes to the Shoik or the Zroya, then even in places where they reveal them, but the Halacha doesn't change. The Mishnah Berurah says that explicitly in Ein Hei, it's called Beis or something like that. But at the same time, that's not an easy position to take, because in Eben HaEzer, Rambam Shulchan Aruch, when they speak about Das Yehudis, so they say explicitly that the Zroya is a question of Das Yehudis. And Das Yehudis generally means a custom, the custom of...
Talk to us about trousers. Is it because of tznius? Is it because of leisilbash? Give us the various opinions.
Well, I assume you think trousers because you know I'm a Brit. Otherwise, you would say pants.
Yes, because I'm speaking to a Brit, I guess. Yeah.
Well, thank you. I appreciate your understanding. So again, you know. Once upon a time, it was a very new thing for girls, for women to wear trousers, and then of course this could be a significant issue of leisilbash when it was a question. You know, this was a man's mode of dress. It was the way that men dressed. This is not the way that women dress. So you know, those first women who were brave enough to put on their trousers. Would be certainly bordering or certainly going into overstepping the line of leisilbash. Today, that's very difficult to, I think, that's a very difficult line to argue. You know, in a day where it's absolutely the norm for women to wear trousers, to wear pants, and not only is it the norm, but it's also very distinguishable and different. You know, pants are made, specially made. These are women's pants. These are men's pants. Clearly distinguished and you know, different. Basically, so it's difficult, I think, to argue that there would be an issue of leisilbash here. And of course, you know, Pritzker discusses it, Robert Vadia discusses it in his Trivia, and others discuss it. And, you know, I'm aware that some Pritzker, Rosner, for example, and others mentioned the Luis Silva's prohibition, but I just think that it's difficult, it's unpersuasive in today's world.
I mean, I know that there are Paiskim and Bnei Brak who believe wearing a watch is Leis Solbosh also. that's the truth.
Well, you know, at the turn of the century, it was women's garments. You know, hand wash, a wrist wash used to be a women's item of jewelry. So, but things have changed, and absolutely, and you know, but these are delicate questions. Also, when does it change? I've been asked often about grooming for men. Can men groom their eyebrows? Can they shave body hair? Is this considered something which is still Leis Silbersh because it's the way of women, or does it change because today it's the way of many men to do it? And these things, you know, one has to keep a finger on the pulse of society and understand whether this is really predominantly a female thing or whether it's, you know, that's passé, it's just no longer the case. And the same is true about women's wearing pants, and I think today it's fairly clear that, you know, few are the women who come to work wearing skirts today, and you know, I think that's just the way society is. The other question, of course, is whether there's a sneers issue outside of Luis Silbersh, and you know, I think certainly it depends on a community norm, right? In our communities, of course, it's not sneers because it sticks out. It's not what people do. And there's a good reason for that also, because at the end of the day, when you start wearing pants and trousers, then there is a real issue of how tight the pants and trousers are, how much they emphasize the contours and the lines of part of the body that we wish to keep tanua, to keep modest. And, you know, to start getting into loose pants and tight pants and tight and so on is of course, a headache that nobody wants to get into, and a slippery slope that, you know, Paiskim and Halacha is, of course, cautious of and wishes to refrain from. And therefore, there's good reason for why from society doesn't accept wearing pants for women.
Now, let me ask you a last question. We're a little running out of time, and it's fascinating to have you on. But isn't sneis by men a topic that is severely, you know, not spoken about where it should be? I mean, and I'm going to get criticized for this one, but I was in a shul a number of years ago by a minor rebbe, and there was a big sign on the wall, and it said, you know, Kavod, Kedushas, Mereinu, Varabeinu, Adeneinu, whatever his name was, is going to be speaking to the ladies about sneis. And I was thinking that the only one time it says in the whole Torah the word sneis is Hatznei Alecha Semashem Alekecha. Now, giving yourself 15 titles doesn't, by me, fall under the rubric of Hatznei Alecha. So he's violating sneis to talk to women about sneis. So my question is that isn't sneis like, why don't we speak to somebody who we, you know, we feel is arrogant or crass or crude or makes, you know, inappropriate jokes? That is just as much a violation of sneis as wearing a short skirt or wearing a short sleeves, or, and yet it is not really spoken about. I mean, maybe I'm overreacting. What's your feeling?
Well, you'll forgive me if I don't comment on the specific, you know, issue of the Rebbe's notice, not going in that direction. But certainly, you know, there is a, tznius is neglected, without a doubt, when it comes to men. The Aruch HaShulchan, actually, I remember seeing in Tumenayin Hei, he has a chakira about whether, just like a man shouldn't see, or can't take kriyashma, he's talking about kriyashma, just like a man can't take kriyashma in front of an uncovered woman, would the same thing apply to a woman who shouldn't say or can't say Kriya Shema in front of an uncovered man? Interesting that he raises this, because I don't remember seeing anybody else of that stature raising the question. And he himself, if I remember correctly, says, well, I haven't seen this in any poskim, so I guess it's okay. And he makes a distinction between men and women in a certain sense of hehorim. But yeah, of course, I mean, of course what you're saying is true. Being tsanua means having an inner world, having your own personal and private world, which you don't, you know, flaunt and show off and express with arrogance at every occasion. And you know, this goes back to where we started. The only time that men are spoken to about sneers is about warning their wives how to dress, which I find, you know, appalling. But at the same time, you know, it has to be said that when it comes to, it's much easier for us as a firm society, for rabbis, for rebbes, for whoever it is, to speak about halacha. Halacha is guidelines. It's very, you know, clearly defined, borderlined. These centimeters, this thickness, these colors, this length, and so on and so forth. And when you make a value into a very halachic system, then of course you will emphasize and sometimes overemphasize the halachic part of the system and speak less about the values, which are by definition a little bit more vague, a little bit harder to define, as a halachic rabbi or somebody that gives halachic rulings, then you'll have less to speak about when you speak to men, because there isn't much halachic material there. It's a value, but it's much harder for us to maintain values than it is to stick to clearly demarcation lines of halacha. And this is why there is such an emphasis on the halachic aspects that are related more to women than the basic value of tznius as it relates to men. Now, I would say, though, that, and this you mentioned at the beginning, there are many halachas that also relate to men concerning tznius, but it's more convenient, it's easier to make our, you know, public domain as sterile as possible, and this makes men's life easier, as it were. I think it's very important to be mechanech both ourselves and our children to those values of tznius for men and for women alike. But it's also understandable that a halachic society will emphasize and underscore those halachic elements. So, you know, what I'm basically saying is that, yes, you're right, but it's something which we can understand where it's coming from, and it's not set to go away anytime soon.
Do you think it's fair to say that we've a little bit, as a community, maybe lost the message of tznius? In other words, a very lavish wedding, over-the-top wedding, would, to me, in my eyes, be not tzniistic, right? Somebody, just spending on money that is very fleshy and in your face is not tzniistic, and that while there is certainly an element of tznius which talks about, you know, hirhurim, etc., but certainly a big body of tznius that Chazal have spoken about is about fine kite, edelkeit, being sensitive, modesty, royalty, elegance, in other words, a beauty of behavior, and that when if we just turn it into, you know, body parts of and clothing articles, we're missing the message of tznius. And what's more, I think we're making it joyless for girls. Whereas girls could see, I'm now a queen, it becomes like an issue of which box of no have I not checked today? Have we a little bit lost the message?
You know, I deeply identify with what you're saying now. And I would add that it's not something which is limited to the field of tznius. I think that this applies to other fields also. You know, just the other day I went to Nechama Avelim, and I saw people coming in, and they came in, they sat down a minute, they said, Hamakim Menachem Eschem, as if there's some like halachic, you know, mitzvah that they're doing, and walking out. And I was thinking, where's the Nichem Avelim? You know, when things become too technical, when we underlie, like you say, the centimeters and the body parts and so on, then there's a danger of missing the wood for the trees, as the expression goes. And, you know, while, of course, the halachic parts are essential and are a deep part of what our Yiddishkeit means to us, we have to be very wary of not missing the value for the halacha. And of, you know, I salute you in making the point, and I think it's very worthy of emphasis.
Rabbi Sefa, it's always an honor to have you on with us. The Dayan from Eretz Yisrael, thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. All the best.
We have the honor of having with us, from Hungary, the Av Beis Din of Budapest. He's also the Shliach of Chabad to Budapest. Rav Baruch Oberlander, who's written and printed on many of these topics. Welcome, Rav Oberlander.
Hello, hi.
Rabbi Oberlander, could you tell us the Shita of Chabad about Sheitlach, hair covering, etc.?
The Shita of Chabad should start with the Alter Rebbe. The Alter Rebbe in Shulchan Aruch, in Erech Chaim, Siman Ayin Hey. Siv Dalet brings down the Ramah. The Ramah writes that Peah Nochris is allowed. You're allowed to say Shema in front of a Peah Nochris. It's not considered the Erva. And the Ramah says, I feel a dark color chasuris. And I mean, even though it's usually covered, it's not a problem. It doesn't have to be covered. And the Alter Rebbe brings it down. I feel a dark color chasuris. The chasuisa muter likris kenegdo. Vigam muter legaloisa. It's allowed to be uncovered. It's not a problem at all. So that's where the Chabad Shita starts. The Tzemach Tzedek in the Tshuvas and also in the Chedushim and Shas has a long pilpul, is mefalpul with the Maram Alshiker that even the little hair shouldn't be uncovered, and that halachically, and that connects to the Mogen Avraham. The Mogen Avraham writes that the Zohar was machmir ma'oit shelo yiro ashum sar me'isho.
So Chabad, Rabbi Oberlin, the Chabad does not hold of the Shulchan Aruch that says tefach be'isha erva.
Tefach be'isha is the guf ha'isha.
No, but besar also. The tefach be'isha nayin hay is talking about sar too. That any makam ha'machusa, except for the shaykh, the Taz says, has a din of tefach be'isha erva. What's does Chabad not hold of that, etc.?
No, but I'm
asking Rabbi Oberlander is that according to the Mechaber, it seems that up to a tefach, is mutter to show of the hair. And in fact, like we said, like if you look at the pictures of the great, you know, the great Rabbi Vadya, you could see clearly him and his wife, they held like the Mechaba, Kipshuta, like the Beis Yosef, that up to Tefach is not a problem. What is Chabad's sheet on that?
No, it's not accepted in Chabad that till a Tefach should be allowed to be uncovered. And probably that connects to the Zohar. The Zohar says it shouldn't be uncovered at all. At all, not only on the street, but even at home, it shouldn't be uncovered at all. And that's
so it's interesting, Rabbi Oberlander. We've had you on. This is the second time we've had you on, and you know, I come from, I guess, from Hasidim. So you try to find b'makish inyan. Both times Chabad was machmer, not like the Shulchan Aruch. So I like shaving. They didn't go to like the Beis Yosef. And so like by Tefach Bisha, they don't go like the Shulchan Aruch. They're more makbid than the Shulchan Aruch, which is interesting.
Let me repeat myself that we spoke last time that anything brought down in the Nosei Kelim of the Shulchan Aruch is part of halacha. And here we're talking about you know, again the Mogen Avraham, which is very machmer, and that's the minhag, which is
okay. Now, what does Chabad hold about shaving the head. In other words, the word paiskim, early paiskim, I think it started with the Vadala Daratsis, which is a, give or take 250, 300 years ago, where they said women should shave the head, which was accepted in much of Hungary, in Oberland, a very limited amount in Poland and in Lithuania. What was Chabad's sheet about that? Both alts, but because it is Magen Avraham, by the way, because it is Magen Avraham, they shouldn't see at all the Tsar, shouldn't see the building, the, you know, any place that they were makbid in that, both for Chatzitza, both for Tznius, etc. What was Chabad's sheet on this?
Yes, it's brought down in the name of Vad Arba Rotzis, but it's not found in the Pinkas. The Vad Arba Rotzis is not found, but it's brought down in the name of the Vad Arba Rotzis. The Lubavitcher Rebbe held that that it, the hair should be cut short, but not very short, not very short, because it's nivul, it's nivul, and it shouldn't be too short. Short it should be, also so it shouldn't go out, it shouldn't be uncovered, and also, you know, for tvila and mikveh, if the hair is short, it's easier to toivel, less chashash of chatzitza, etc. But it should not be cut completely.
When you say nivel, what does that mean? Explain to the crowd who may not know.
For example, the Rebbe points to that in the Holocaust, when they wanted to embarrass the Jewish women, they shaved their heads, which for a woman is very embarrassing.
Well, respectfully, I could go prior to that. It says by Eishes Yufas Toyer, it says V'golcha Es Reisha, you shave her head, and the Ramban says because it makes her look, because it's an evil of the Isha, V'golcha Es Reisha.
Yeah, he says that there are many. There are a few sources on the subject. So the Rebbe says that it should be, that it should not be shaved completely.
Uh huh. And you were going to say you were going to continue. You started saying, you said the Tzemach Tzedek, and then you were going to continue on further.
Yeah, the Tzemach Tzedek is writes very strongly. He refused the Maram Al-Shaker that you're allowed to have, you know, hair a little uncovered. Mibad letzamoson.
With the Rashba.
He writes very strongly. Yeah, with the Rashba, and he has a Riches also in Chedushim on Masechtes Brachos, and also in the Tshuvas in Eben Ezer. And then we get to the
Rabbi Rebbe. So wait, but Rabbi Oberlin, so was the Tzemach Tzedek go with the Rashba, and he held me bad with Samasim as mutter or not?
No. He says it's not.
So he was machmir. He did not hold like the Rashba. He was machmir over the Rashba. Okay.
Yes. And then comes the Lubavitcher Rebbe, when he not once and not twice he wrote in letters and in different places that he prefers much more a sheitel over a mitpachas, over a tichel. Why? He says that by a sheitel completely covers the hair, a tichel could sometimes slip a lot, and much of the hair can be uncovered. So he very, very strongly urged for a sheitel against covering it with a tichel.
And is that the only reason he brings?
Yeah, that's the reason that he brings is because the sheitel covers much more, and also that it doesn't slip. And he says that sometimes even a lady which would cover her hair correctly would meet somebody and would feel a little uncomfortable, and just, you know, she just moves a little bit back the tichel, and it's already uncovered. And by a sheitel, it's not practical, such a thing. This is the point that he brought up. I personally feel that there's also another point which points to a sheitel over a tichel, because a sheitel can be much more elegant than a tichel, and that's why you could much easier get people to put on to have kisui roish, to have hair covered with a sheitel than with a tichel. For example, I know a certain Sephardi women that go uncovered their hair. Why? Because the sheitro is not allowed by the Sephardim, so they prefer not to cover their hair.
Wow.
So I feel that's another reason why we should prefer a sheitel over a tichel. Because a woman should feel that she could be very elegantly, nicely dressed, and she doesn't have to be, give up on this.
Can I suggest another possibility?
Mm-hmm.
The Igros Moshe in Evan Ezra Aleph Nuntes was asked about a man who was makbid that his wife shouldn't cut her hair, and her minig
like
was
a Rebbetzin.
So Ramosha writes something very interesting, and Ramosha writes, he says that Chayni Hamagel, the Gemara says in Tainus and Daf Chaf Gimel, was makbid that his wife should dress beautifully. Why? So that he shouldn't be look at other women. Kadesha lo yitin eino b'isha cheres. So Ramosha writes that there's something about a husband and a wife being that the husband should look at his wife and find her no'abeinav, right? So and bechlal. So I would suggest, and I don't know this, that is it possible that Chabad in particular, they don't live in ghettos, but a Chabad shliach is out in the world and he's usually surrounded by fryer people for the most part, and maybe some, but his look, their job is to be Makarov. You're not Makarov for the most part. You don't go to Borough Park to be Makarov people. You go to the Arba Kanfis Haaretz. And therefore, when you're out in the world, and women today are dressed in the most, not sneistic, provocative way, so if his wife is going to be wearing a tichel, it creates the challenge that Chayni Amagel struggled with.
Sir Elisha writes... 100%. Makes sense 100%, and not only for Arba Kanfis Haaretz, it makes sense also for Williamsburg and Borough Park also. It's that when it happens, the Gemara in Shabbos says that Kadesh, that's why you're allowed to go with a Pei Anochis B'chotzer on Shabbos, Kadesh L'chavav Al-Bail, I think that's the Lashon over there in Shabbos.
Right.
Meaning, you don't have to go too far. The Gemara says that, and there's no question about that.
Now, did the Chabadska Rebbe have an opinion about human hair sheitlach?
Yes, the Rebbe writes that a woman can wear a sheitel even if the sheitel is much nicer than her own hair, like some things. And I feel that he meant to say even if it's human hair, but human hair is mentioned in the Ramah. The Ramah in Dark Moshe in El Cheshabes writes even, and the Ramah mentions in Dark Moshe even if it's her own hair, she could have a sheitel from that.
Yeah, and the Mishnah Berurah brings the Mishnah Berurah in Ayin Hay brings that opinion as well. And I don't have a Mishnah Berurah in front of me, but it's like in, I'm guessing Mishnah Berurah of Katan Dalad or Hay brings brings it as well. Halacha. It brings two opinions.
It's strange that sometimes people have this. People think as if human hair is something that was invented yesterday.
Yeah.
When the Gemara talks about the woman putting on saris that should the hair should look more, Ibepashtis, it's talking about human hair.
Yeah. And again, you're pointing out that even if it's her own hair that was cut off and turned into a wig, the Ramah's not there.
Yeah, the Ramah says the Fetish, even if it's her own hair. Ben shel chaverta, ben shel saroiseho.
Right, and did the Rebbe of Chabad have an opinion about the Indian hair sheitlach and this whole tumult that's going on?
I don't recall that he ever said something about it.
Have the Paiskim in Chabad ever opined on it or looked into that topic?
I looked into the subject, and it seemed to me, according to witnesses. I'm talking about Goyshe witnesses that writing down their experience, that we're not talking about Tikrovis of Edesora. It's like something, a bittle that they do, that it's like humility, bringing them to humility, whatever. but there's no mizbeach and there's no avodah zarah in front of them while they're doing. So I don't think that we're talking about tikraivus avodah zarah over here.
Now, did the Rebbe of Chabad have any opinion about long sheitlach as opposed to short sheitlach? Did he ever speak about it?
Long sheitlach is not. The Rebbe didn't like specifically point out long and short and how long. Just generally, what the poskim say, also on sheitlach and also on dresses and also on makeup and everything that you know should be tzniyazdik. So, you know, there always has to be a border of what you shouldn't, where you should stop.
So you're saying it's not a din in long or short, it's a din in sneers.
It's a din in sneers, and you could have the most sneers big address, meaning sneers big in size, in length, and it could be not sneers big because it's provocative or whatever, it passes a certain border. So sure, the sheitel also has to have be able and has to be matim to the lacha of tznius.
Rabbi Oberlander, thank you very much for telling our olam what the shita of Chabad is about, hair covering. Thank you so much for your time. It's always an honor to have our Bezdin of Hungary on with us.
Thank you very much,
Diskalamita. We have on the phone with us from Chicago the very well-known, famous blogger from Emes Femuna, Rabbi Harry Marillis. He's a musmuch of Rabbi Aaron Soloveitchik. Welcome, Rabbi Marillis.
Thank you.
So, Rabbi Marillis, we're doing, you know, one program about sheitlach, or we're actually going to do two or three different aspects. And one of the things that many of our listeners have written us is, how come in Lithuania it was known that the vast majority of women did not cover the hair, including many famous Rosh Hashiva's wives. I don't know, I can't give you a list, but this is what my writers write. And there must be, was everybody there doing avaryanim, or is there some type of a halachic basis for this? I understand that you've written about this, spoken about this. Could you give us a little perspective?
Okay, first let me preface anything I want to tell you. I'm not a posek. And it's strictly my opinion based on my many, many years of study and also just general information that I've gotten anecdotally. The fact is, I believe that many people in Lithuania, people, you know, the Haskalah movement had started to come in and women were more out in the world. And I believe what happened was that they took on the custom of not covering their hair for those reasons. I mean, I can't really say why they did it, but I do know that it was very prevalent, as you said earlier, and it's mentioned in the Aruch HaShulchan that this was very much the case, even though it was really against halacha. But the fact that so many women did it, he believed that it allowed for people to make a bracha, even in front of a woman who didn't cover their hair. Now, there's a concept called Terebi Isha Irva, which means that the hair of a woman is considered Irva, meaning nakedness. But I don't believe that is in the same sense that it's used in other places in the Gemara. The Irva by a woman's hair could not possibly be naked because we're only talking about a married woman. An unmarried woman does not have to cover her hair at all. So why it applies to a married woman and not an unmarried woman, I don't know. But that's the way the halacha is, and it's derived from the Torah. It's based on the Maisa of the Sota, where the procedure is that her hair is uncovered. So Chazal learned from that a woman normally covers her hair, a married woman. So that's pretty much the history of it, to the best of my knowledge.
So why in Lithuania were they mekel against the Gemara and the Shulchan Aruch Mefreshes?
There's another thing about sheitel that I should mention, also covering the hair, and there's something called Das Yehuda and Das Yehudis and Das Moshe. Das Moshe is more of the Oraisa level of Isser, and that's basically covering the majority of the hair. And Das Yehudis, the Benos Yisrael took upon themselves a little bit more of a chumah to cover their hair completely. That's my understanding of it. Why in Lithuania, let's say, not in the Hasidic Kehillot? I believe that that's probably a function of how much out in the world the two communities were. In the Hasidic world, I think the women were less likely to go out and more likely to be more dedicated to the halacha. Whereas in the Lithuanian world, where once upon a time everyone covered their hair, Jews and non-Jews alike, people became lax about it, and I think that Jewish women followed suit when they started being more involved in the outside world, going to work and going to university. I think that's what caused the problem. You know, one thing led to another, one generation led to another. I don't know how long this particular thing, or what point in history, let me rephrase that, what point in history this happened, and obviously there was a point in time where all women did cover their hair, just like the rest of the world. But, you know, there's an expression, unfortunately, and many of the innovations that come to pass in the general world, unfortunately, many Jews take upon themselves too. Often it doesn't involve halacha. In this case, it did. And for some reason, I don't believe there were too many machos made about it. I can't explain that. I mean, I could be wrong about that, but even if there was, obviously most of the Lithuanian women didn't listen to it. And this happened, you know, in America. This was very prevalent. Most Orthodox women, until I think the mass influx of immigrants after the Holocaust, most Orthodox women did not cover their hair in America for similar reasons.
So is there a halachic basis that you know of for it?
No, although I do know that a modern Orthodox thinker by the name of Nechoyel Broyd, he's a professor of law at Emory University, had tried to not justify it, but he was Malamed Schus, he said, and tried to find a basis for it, but I don't think he was ultimately successful. Many people argued with him and said it was a misunderstanding of the sources. So I don't really think there is a halakhic basis that I'm aware of.
Okay. Is there any other points on this topic that you'd like to discuss or you think our audience would like to hear?
Well, the only thing that concerns me, first let me just say that I personally, it's hard to rationalize the halacha that Seir Be'isha Erva applies only to married women, not unmarried women. So I have a little bit of difficulty understanding it. Now, mind you, I'm not trying to be Malamed Tzchus at all. I'm just telling you in terms of understanding the halacha. The fact of a woman covering her hair in a society where that's not a common thing to do makes it difficult for many women, especially in the modern Orthodox world, to cover the hair properly until the advent of the modern wig, the modern shetel. Now, they're very, very expensive, but they're made very, very well. And the fact that it's much easier for a woman to look her best by wearing a very nice shetel makes it easier for women to cover their hair. And the recent move by some, I don't know if they were Rabbanim, but some elements on the right to try and alter them, and because, you know, if they're too long or whatever the reason was, I think it pays a disservice to a situation where many, many women, including many in the modern Orthodox, you know, in the centrist world, and a lot of women on the left wing will cover their hair. Ironically, many on the left wing don't even want to rely on a shekel, pay a nachris, which there's a machlokas in the Gemara about. They feel that it's not proper. My own Rebbe's wife did not use a shekel. She covered her hair with a scarf. And that many modern Orthodox women on the left, you'll never see a wig on them. You'll see other kinds of head coverings. Now, many of them also don't do das Yehudis. They do das Moshe, which means they cover most of it, but not all of it. So there's many different ways to look at it. But I just want to emphasize that I'm very much in favor of women looking their best within the parameters of halacha. And if that means buying a very nice modern shekel, I think they should go for it. And I think it does a disservice to the mitzvah of covering your hair when people try to answer various different forms of it.
Well, I saw that one place they said that if you wear a long shetel, it's the equivalent of, again, sarabi sherva, because it's not sneistic anymore. In fact, it becomes pretistic, so it's like you're not covering your hair. How would you respond to that?
Well, I would say that it might, you know, somebody might not think of it as modest in his community and might think of it as priestess in his community, but the strict letter of the law, if you allow pay in achus, then there's no difference between long hair and short hair. And, you know, it isn't just hair that makes the woman. There are many, there's makeup, there's the way she dresses, there's all kinds of things that make up a woman's beauty. There's her personality, there's all kinds of things that make up a woman's beauty and attractiveness, and it isn't just the length of somebody's hair. So I would argue very strongly with that mentality, and I'm sure there are many that would disagree with me, but that's my opinion.
Yeah, I'm just thinking halachically, if a woman would cover her hair with three hats and three tichloch and two hats, three scarves and two hats, and on top of her head, she would put a video screen attached to her tichel, and it would be playing a movie that was not sneistic. Would somebody say she's not covering her hair because on her head she has a movie screen that's showing not sneistic pictures, so it's the equivalent of not covering her hair? Anybody would laugh. They would say, of course, she's covering her hair, and she's also doing something else that's problematic. So if somebody's wearing a long sheitel, which means they're covering their hair, and their sheitel is now creating hirhurim, right, is very attractive. Somebody thinks that crosses the line. That has nothing to do with not covering your hair. It's like the equivalent. She would have a movie screen on top of her head. So to say that it's the equivalent of not covering your hair strikes me just as, honestly, I'm a ratzis.
Yeah, well, there is also a difference between saying ser b'isha erva and tznias. Tznias is like almost an entirely different topic. I mean, a woman can dress according to the strict letter of the law and still not be tznias.
Correct. So this would be an abrogation of tznias, but would have nothing to do with not covering your hair.
I would just put a little asterisk on that. It might be a violation of tznias in certain circles. In other circles, it would not at all be a violation of tznias. It depends on what your community standards are. Now, another example. In Satmar, if you don't wear very, very thick stockings with a seam, you might be considered not sneis. Whereas in a typical firm community, even the Haredi world, that would not be true. You don't have to wear seams in your stockings. It depends on the community. It depends what their standards are.
So what is called sneis in a certain extent changes according to your community. And I think an example is the Rambam in Hilchos Ishus. I forgot which perek, maybe perek Yud. I don't have a Rambam in front of me. He says that another example of pritzas is a woman who goes out without a redid. And the Shulchan Aruch, the Torah explains, what's a redid? It's the equivalent of a hijab. It's like a burqa, something that covers the entire body except for the face. The Rambam says that if an isha wears this, she's yaitzah shaloi b'ksuva because she's over al das b'isha. Now, clearly, I haven't recently seen a woman wearing a redid or a hijab. So clearly tznias changes according to the customs, like the Aruch HaShulchan and Ayin Hei that you mentioned before. So yes, clearly, you're saying in certain societies, a long sheitel would be considered priestistic, and in other communities would be considered the norm.
That's correct. And we have to be very careful when we talk about tznias versus erva. The isuri erva, the parts of the body that have to be covered, according to the strict letter of the law, are very clear and unviable. So it doesn't matter what the community standards in terms of that are. But once you get past that, you know, how long should a dress be below the knee? Should it be down to the ankle? Should it be down to the calf? You know, some people say if it's too long, it's not tznias. Then already you're talking about community standards. But the strict letter of Hilchos Erva are not to be violated. There's no community standards to talk of. It's just going beyond that, what's considered tznias, what's not considered tznias.
Well, Rabbi Marillis, thank you very much. It's been an honor having you on with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Take care. Bye-bye.
And this is the answers to last week's Halacha Riddle. We had many, many responses, probably more than 100, and we've chosen sort of like a raffle of those who we believe got the correct responses. And the winner this week is David Brodsky from Cincinnati. I was delighted to hear that there are actually people in Cincinnati who listen, but I think he really got it right. So let's hear what Rav David has to say.
Shalom Aleichem, Rav David. This is David Brodsky from Cincinnati, Ohio. First of all, Yasher Koyach to you for all of your beautiful Avodas HaKodesh. I get so much hanah from listening to the show every week. I'm calling to answer this latest show's riddles. I'd like to suggest an answer to both of the riddles. Regarding the first riddle of Lefi Lechida, a Nida does not make a bracha on her counting because she might see Dam and then it will, break the counting, so she shouldn't count if there's a possibility that something will get messed up and then it'll be a bracha levatzola. So why don't we say the same thing with Sfiras HaOmer? I think you kind of alluded to it yourself, that the difference is that when it comes to Nida, it's not biyada, it's not under control. If she sees, she sees, she can't control that. So Mamela, we're not going to start her making brachas when beyond her control, it can get ruined. Mashain Kane, when it comes to Sfiras HaOmer, even though, yes, a person may forget, ultimately it's biyada not to forget. And therefore, Chazal did not take away the opportunity to make a bracha just because a person might forget, because ultimately it's biyadai to control that. With regards to the second riddle of why does Lefi the Taz, even though I think others argue, Lefi the Taz, why is it by Shmini Atzeres that you can be Mekamel Yontif early and you could mamish eat a suda outside of the sukkah of ice, that it is no longer sukkahs. It must be Shmini Atzeres. So why don't we say the same thing when it comes to Shabbos and Sfiras HaOmer? Why don't we say that if you're being mekabel Shabbos early, you can count the Omer? I would like to suggest that the way it works when you're mekabel Shabbos or Yontif early, it doesn't mean that you literally change the day to the next day, but rather you extend the Kedusha of the Yontif or Shabbos into the previous day. So if let's say it's Erev Shabbos, it's Friday, so now Friday has the Kedusha of Shabbos, but it's not mamish the next day. So the same thing by Shmini Atzeres. If the Etzem, it's still Sukkis, but you extended Shmini Atzeres into Sukkis. But the Maisa, being that you're eating a Suda that's Shayach to Shmini Atzeres, the Shmini Atzeres is a Suda, so you're able to eat it outside of the Sukkah. Masha'in Kain, when it comes to counting the Omer on Erev Shabbos, once you've been Mekabel Shabbos early, being that it's still Friday and it's not the next day, you just extended the Kedusha Shabbos into Friday, so you might be able to make Kiddush, because that's Shayach to Shabbos. But a Zaitiga Mitzvah, we don't say that it's the next day. It's still Friday, regarding other mitzvahs. It's just Lagabe Shabbos. You've extended Shabbos into Friday, so anything that's Shayach to Shabbos would be different. I also wanted to just say a few other comments on previous shows that I've been meaning to call. I just haven't had a chance. First of all, maybe over a month ago, when you spoke about feminism, you brought up the famous Ha'ara that many people ask, and that is what's shot that we say, Shaloi Asani Goy, Shaloi Asani Oved, Shaloi Asani Isha. Why do we say it in the negative? Why not say it in the positive? Sha'asani Yisrael. I don't have the Sefer on me, but I once had a Sefer that I read called Jewish Prayer by a Rabbi Wolgamuth of Boston. He was close with Yosef Ber Soloveitchik of YU. And he addressed this Ha'ara. He addressed this question, and he said that there were some that did. I think the Yerushalmi says that. But the reason why we don't is because it imposes upon us a great responsibility. When you say Shasani Yisrael, then you have to live up to it, and it's a kitchug if you don't. So therefore, in order to not be mekatchug in ourselves, we say that Baruch Hashem, you didn't make me a goy. obviously the implication is you made me a yid, but we don't like to say it straight out because then, chas v'shalom, if we don't live up to that, there'll be a kitrug on us. One last point I'd like to mention is in one of your other Haligah shows, you mentioned Ha'ara, you spoke about the sheet of Reb Chaim Soloveitchik that once you complete a mitzvah, even if it's in somewhat of a busy evid sick of fashion, that's it, the mitzvah is over. So you asked the Ha'ara that how is it that when it comes to Mikra Megillah, the Minhag Klal Yisrael is at the very end of the Megillah, the whole Kehillah reads the last Pasuk out loud. Based on the, once they do that, L'chaira, they should have finished the mitzvah, and now for the Balturei to go back and read it from a klaf, seemingly they lost that maila of reading from a klaf because the mitzvah was just completed. I would like to suggest an answer, and that is as follows. There's a machloikas, the Rambam, and I think the Ravid, or the Rush, I believe, when it comes to Miris Mila, when it comes to Tzitzin, Sheinan Ma'akvin. So once the Mila is completely over and there's Tzitzin, Sheinan Ma'akvin that are left, the Rush says you should still go back because there's still Shaychis of Hidur Mitzvah even after the Mitzvah is complete. The Rambam says, no, don't go back, it's done, it's finished, we can't do anything anymore. That whole machlokes is only when the mitzvah has been completed. But they all agree that when you're still being oisik in the milah itself, then of course, even the Rambam will tell you, if the mitzvah is still going on, then avada, you can go back and be mahadeh the mitzvah. So I'd like to suggest that here too, when it comes to Mikra Megillah, the mitzvah is still going on. There was no das by anyone that the mitzvah is finished. The Balkari is still reading. He has a brief pause where everybody in the Kehillah reads it, but everyone still has das that we're not done. We're reading this for Persumei Nisa. And then, right after, literally, Toshkadei Diba, right after the Kehillah finishes, the Balkari then completes the Megillah. So being that you're still being oisik in a mitzvah, that everyone agrees, the Rambam, the Rosh, Kuli Alma, Moidu, that Vada, you can still be Mahadeh the mitzvah by reading out of a klaf, and it's not over, and even Rav Chaim Brisker would hold that the mitzvah is not over, and of course you can still add Hidr to the mitzvah, called Man, it's going on. Shtoyach, again, for all of your amazing work, I look forward every week to hearing the show, I discuss it with my Chaverim, and thank you so much. Called to.